Off the Ball on News Talk 106 to 108.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then. What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
All right, you are very welcome along to the football show. If you've just joined us, it is Hull 1, Manchester United 0 on the night. 2-1 to Manchester United on aggregate. And this is a much better, well, much more interesting scenario than we had anticipated.
Much more interesting scenario than I think the people of Hull had anticipated as well.
Did they
show up? I think there was a lot of comments just following sort of people who were at the match, you know, tweeting earlier on about how I think parts of the top tier, not necessarily visible on TV, were empty, and just around before the game, I mean, Hull were even at half strength, you know, not necessarily playing a full strength side. And the suggestion was the first few minutes was testimonial-like almost as well, but they've made it a good game. Because Manchester United have been going through the motions, really.
Yeah.
And they are, you know, they feel they're a pretty strong team. But Hull have looked okay, I must say, in a couple of games. Since, you know, since Paul Merson voiced his disdain at these people coming in here, taking our jobs from English people like Thierry Henry, as he said, I think, or something along those lines. You know, the Hull have actually, in a couple of games, you've watched them, they've been okay.
Yeah.
You know, he's sort of putting a shape on a team, and they actually did a reasonable job in the first leg, given that they were missing all of their defence.
Yeah.
You know, they might feel a little bit unlucky to be behind in the tie in some ways, just given that it's come at them in sort of difficult circumstances.
I haven't watched enough of Hull this year to know what the first choice 11 would actually look like, but I have a fair idea that Sean Maloney isn't in it and he starts tonight.
I saw Maloney on the team sheet earlier, and I think I'd had a blank. I'd completely forgotten almost he was there. Now, yeah. Obviously, they're having a bit of asset stripping as well at the moment. I mean, Snodgrass is on his way, and I think Abel Hernandez today as well has been linked. He's going somewhere too in the transfer deadline. I don't know, is that going to be followed by bodies coming in? But there's certainly, you know, there's been, you know, David Moyer has been at right back in various games recently, which is a sort of an Irish emergency measure. It's not unusual to see it in the Premier League. They're not necessarily in great shape off the park, I think. So he's got a tough job. So I think in the circumstances, he's doing pretty well.
Yeah, Evandro has just come on. He wears gloves and he's got a Brazilian name, so he must be good.
That's a recipe for greatness.
Yeah. It's a decent Man United team. We should just tell people Rashford, Zlatan and Jesse Lingard are the front trio. Paul Pogba, Michael Carrick and Ander Herrera are the three behind them. And then it is Rojo at left back, Darmian at right back, Smalling and Phil Jones, centre back, David De Gea in goals. There's an argument that this is Man United's best team with maybe Juan Mata in there somewhere.
No, I mean, it's up there. I mean, it's, you know, given that you know, you can rotate the team for a given match. I think if it was a Premier League game and that was the team. Yeah. If it was a Premier League team, though, Premier League weekend, you wouldn't be shocked if that team was put out.
No. And also, Mkhitaryan, after that brilliant burst of play when the goal started to come upon his introduction to the team, he's kind of cooled off just a little bit.
Yeah, but to be fair, I probably should have caught that. He would still probably be in their stronger side if there was a cup final, but they're still pretty close to it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, but you can see him being dropped or rested over the next couple of weeks to just make sure that the form comes back up to that, bubbles back up to that level.
Yeah, very much so. But you just would expect, I mean, ultimately, against a weak enough Hull side, that these players should be capable of picking them off. They have stepped it up now these last few minutes, and they are applying pressure, and they just scored as we speak with Pogba.
But, 100 million quid worth of goals.
Yeah, sort of a bit of a messy one, that actually. It's a good break forward down the left. Was it Royo or Rashford? But loose ball breaks his way and he's toe poked it into the right corner of the net. So
it's a snog from Fellaini for his troubles.
Troubles.
There you go. 1-1 after 65 minutes on the clock in the second leg. I'm just going to see a replay of it here. In fairness, definitely in the start, the second half, they've been a bit better, but they were so sluggish in the first half.
No, they have. The last 10 minutes or so, they've just put on, there's just been a bit of pressure. And I suppose it's paid off a bit. I mean, it's actually a pretty bad goal for Hull to concede. We're just watching it here. Yeah, it was actually Rashford, yeah, down the left. It was a tackle on Rashford, basically diverted the ball into the path of Pogba. It was a bit of a gift, really.
Yeah, I think it is Tom Huddleston who will be credited with the assist in the end. Okay, so there's loads of other stuff that we want to talk about. The big news from an Irish perspective today is that Conor Hourihan has moved to Aston Villa for £3 million.
It's a big move. I mean, I think you discussed it a bit earlier on. I mean, he's out of contract in the summer. So actually paying £3 million for a player that's out of contract in 6 months' time is quite a vote of confidence in that player. And it is a big opportunity for him. I know there was a period, I don't know, when Steve Bruce came in and sort of Villa had a win or two, you sort of thought they're really capable of getting the promotion picture now. They still have time. They're like 9 points off sixth place at the moment. It's conceivable they could get in there, but they've brought in Lansbury, they've brought in an Icelandic guy as well. I think Bruce is trying to build a team there that certainly, if not this year, you would assume that next year they're going to be right to the top of the promotion list. So it's a great move for him. He's got more chance of getting to the Premier League with Villa than he does with Barnsley. He's going to get paid much more money there. It's a big club, and for a guy who's been had to deal with rejection, you know, at various times in his career, from Sunderland, from Ipswich, dropping down to Plymouth and then working his way up, I think to be in a situation where Championship clubs are offering big money, it is like sort of the turning point in his career, because the turning point of his career, I mean, would have been going to Barnsley
or maybe Plymouth.
Or even Plymouth. But I suppose it's a defining moment in the sense that he's arrived. You know, he's arrived at maybe he's moved up a level here in the food chain.
I know it's kind of snobbery, but this automatically catapults him into the reckoning for inclusion in Ireland squads.
I don't know about that. I mean, I still think they know enough about him, and it's interesting. Like earlier this season. In sort of the English season context, I mean, he was in provisional squads a couple of times. Okay. They'd gone to watch him for Barnsley in the Championship several times, and Roy Keane worked with him at Sunderland and Ipswich, so knows him. And it was interesting that Martin O'Neill did say at one point, look, he's got more to do. I don't think he'd played well when they'd gone to see him. And Keane obviously, I mean, I think rates him, but also knows him. And I wonder, are they maybe being a little bit harder on him?
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think he's necessarily going to get a move and be in the reckoning, because I think he's been in the reckoning all along. But maybe how he responds to the challenge of playing for a bigger club, it's going to help his case. But I do think they should know enough about him already that a move shouldn't automatically catapult him in there. They've had reservations for whatever reason. And maybe there's some of them are unfair, but it is a position that actually we are still quite strong. So he's got if he starts taking things, you know, sort of hits the ground running at Villa and is thriving, he's got a great chance. But you know, he's got Harry Arthur and a few other people in the midfield department. Jeff Hendrick, Robbie Brady can play in there. You've got James McCarthy. It's a position where we're well stocked at the moment. Even a couple of guys like Liam Kelly and Ryan Manning, who we had on last night, that's like the position actually now in the Ireland squad where there's the most competition. So he's going to have to perform exceptionally well to get ahead of some of those guys in the queue. What I would say is he certainly deserves a cap.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple of friendlies coming up this year, with one in March and one in June. And I think he's certainly worthy of getting on the pitch and showing what he can do. But it's certainly a reward for dropping down, the old sort of one step back, you know, for two forward. I think he embodies that.
There's a proper pathway there for
him. Yeah, and he sort of deserves to, you know, celebrate and sort of revel. I saw earlier Paul McGrath was sending on messages of good luck, and he seemed pretty chuffed by that. And he's just moved on to a different grade now. And I guess the challenge is to respond to suddenly being in a position of a bit more comfort in your life, and how does it respond sort of football-wise?
Yeah, okay. Best of luck to Conor Horan at Villa. There's been a goal in that game. We'll get the story of the equaliser for Manchester United now here from Al Ross.
Hull 1, Manchester United 1, but more importantly, on aggregate, it's Hull 1, Manchester United 3, and Paul Pogba has scored the goal that must surely see United through to the final against Southampton at Wembley. It was a good run by Zlatan Ibrahimovic down the left-hand wing. He played in Marcus Rashford. Rashford got to the byline. Tom Huddleston got a foot in to prod the ball away from Rashford, but back into the centre where Paul Pogba was waiting to slot it home, left-footed into the bottom corner. Nothing the keeper could do, and that should be enough to see United through. Hull 1, Manchester United 1.
Graham Hunter, good evening to you.
Hey there, baby.
How are you doing?
Enjoying the Copa. The Copa's brilliant. It's done right in Spain. This idea that the majority of the big games are played right throughout the month of January means that squads, elite players who love three games a week, who love the balance being on matches and competition rather than on training, those big players in all the big squads, get going, really get going. And what's more, we get jam-packed, brilliant football, non-stop. It's got the some of the intensity, but I think a slightly saner timetable than people get so excited about in the sort of festive period of football in the Premier League. And, okay, the semis sometimes spill over into February, but effectively January, every midweek is cracking football. And we've had really deluxe stuff this season, all through this month.
Yeah, Barcelona 1-0 up tonight.
They are from 1-0 from the first leg in the Anoeta. It's a sort of careful, intelligent game with sort of flashes of passion. But the big thing for Football Club Barcelona is the players that they're working. One, Luis Enrique started to rotate the squad. I had an interview with him before they won the Champions League. It was a one-on-one interview, and one of the things he emphasised to me over and over again during that treble season was the pressure in training, the pressure that the players 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 have put on the nominal starting 11 right throughout the season, day by day and in matches, has meant the standards haven't dropped. And for whatever reason, he'd gone through a spell when Barcelona were unconvincing, when he wasn't rotating, he wasn't giving players chances. Immediately he's done that, predominantly right throughout this month. The standard, the pressing, the recuperation of the ball, the speed of movement of the ball, everything's changed here. It's that old adage about football being a simple game that sometimes we overcomplicate. Therefore, tonight, just as last week, Barcelona have been hungry, almost recognisable from the better parts of the Guardiola era when they haven't got the ball. Still not as good on the ball as they were then, and missing Iniesta, Rafinha, Busquets tonight, but much, much, much harder to play against now.
Well, that's interesting because obviously Real Madrid at the moment having just a little bit of a blip. It's 2 wins in 5 games.
Yeah, it's been interesting how this has happened because in that brilliant triptych of games against Sevilla that we talked about so much, it was so close to being a thumping win, a brave, brave draw, and then a clever 1-0 away win. And for the want of 5 minutes where they lost 2 goals, lost their unbeaten record, there has been problem stacked on problem after that. A bit of an attitude worry when they lost to Celta in the Cup and immediately afterwards at home. That cost them because they went up to Balaidos last night in what's easily one of my games of the season, 2-2 draw. That meant that Celta went through for the second semi-final in a season, in a year at least. Madrid out, but also Madrid booed against Malaga, and winning their injury crisis is genuinely very big. One or two players look just a little bit less certain that in the 40-game run where they were unbeaten, everything went for them, but they worked to make it that way. There's just that tiny hesitation now. People aren't skiving, people aren't sloppy, but there's the, instead of the, we're going to get this, and I want to emphasise, when they were given a pummeling last night by Celta, and it was a fantastic, the best of cup football, and they're losing 2-1 with seconds left, they still get the equaliser. The fighting spirit is there. There's not a huge amount of difference between the Real Madrid of now and the Real Madrid right throughout that 40-game run, except the injury crisis is really telling on them. And secondly, they're just looking over their shoulder and saying, why are the same things not getting us draws and wins anymore?
Yeah, this is just apropos of nothing, but we're obviously very interested in Gareth Bale's fitness, and there was some talk that maybe he was going to be back a little bit earlier than anticipated. You don't happen to know?
I think the only thing that you can say, because first of all, you have to say that it's the doctors need to say, yeah, you're ready to start competitive training. Secondly, Bale, who's notoriously got such an extraordinary athletic physique that it needs almost Olympic tuning. You'll be used to the fact that he's quite regularly, both in the Spurs, but latterly his Madrid career, pushed himself to coming back early and then twinged and lost another 10 days, 2 weeks. They'll try to avoid that. So say playing again, let me avoid saying that because I ain't no doctor, I ain't Gareth Bale. What we can say is that his marathon campaign to be fit ahead of schedule has taken him to the point where he's doing work already that will bring him within touching distance of competitive training. And if he doesn't have some sort of ancillary twinge or knock, then he'll be back playing earlier than was expected.
Pardon me, we should talk about Celta Vigo because their manager, who is a disciple of Marcelo Bielsa, is doing amazing work at Celta.
Yeah, I think he is. I think that he was picked to replace Luis Enrique, and it showed that Mini Ambrose, the football director at Celtic, is clever and had forward planning. In the Southampton mode, you've always got the next signing, the next coach, 2-3 down the line planned. So it was at Celtic. And I think if you want to pick up on what you said, he plays the kind of pressing, intense, attacking, attractive football that you see under Bielsa or Sampaoli, and it's very much in mode at the moment, and therefore sooner or later a big club's going to say to Celtic, we want to take him away. But that brand of football is backed up by his discipline. Oriana, their little, pretty horrible little striker who nips about and get a goal or two, but it's just a spoilt brat. Crossed the line once too many. Burrito said to the club, this guy's out and out forever. The club said, okay, we back you. More than that, since Burrito took over, they've played Barca 5 times. They've won 3 of them, 2-4 goal wins at the Balaidos, plus a 1-0 win during the treble season at the Camp Nou. Atleti, they've done damage to Simeone's Atleti on several occasions, including knocking them out of the cup in last year's semi-final. It was only Real Madrid that wouldn't bend the knee. Until now, a win at the Bernabeu last week. And I mean, genuinely a fabulous game. If people listened off the ball, didn't have the chance to watch this live on television, I urge you to go to YouTube and just watch the highlights of, for example, Ronaldo's free kick. Absolutely, even for him, top drawer. His header, with 25 minutes gone, which is about 3.5 metres out from goal, there's no chance of Sergio, the keeper, reacting, but he does. Touches it onto the bar, volley from Ronaldo onto the post. There's drama, penalty calls, beautiful football, passionate fans right throughout. It's just the ultimate in cup experiences. And unfortunately for Madrid, it cost them, but Celta earned their place. And there won't be a team that's it's looking like Atleti, Barca, and Atleti, Barca and Celta are going to be 3 of the 4 in the semi-finals, and nobody will want Celta, not one of them.
Why is Iago Aspas suddenly playing football at an acceptable level when Liverpool fans are wondering who the hell is this guy?
I think he's one of these guys who I found it extremely hard to sell, not just at Anfield, but also at Sevilla. Clearly at Sevilla he was better. It's a fact that he's a homebird. He will talk to you now about how he will happily sign away the rest of his career to staying at his home club. He spoke after last night's win, and although he didn't score, he's their leader. He is playing the kind of football that Liverpool invested money in him for. He'll go past players. He'll draw defences out of position. He'll pull off outrageous finishes, good assists. You're right. He looks nothing like the player who kind of floundered, but this is his club. It's passionate for him. It's like Fernando Torres and Atleti. He said after the victory, or after eliminating Real Madrid last night, money, high wages cannot buy me being part of my team that I dreamed of playing for with my girlfriend, my kids, and my parents in the stadium watching me. It doesn't mean he would never leave. No, that's stupid. But he is. It's round peg, round hole. He's comfortable, confident, happy with a coach who believes in his brand of football. And actually, rather than being seen as some sort of, you know, a jack-in-the-box player who's supposed to produce only special moments, there's been responsibility heaped on his shoulders. And maybe because it's his club, he's loved it.
Graham, I mean, you mentioned, I didn't see the cup game but involving Madrid, but the Sevilla game the week before was a fantastic match, like one of the, you know, one of the best games I think anyone would see this year. Does it seem, I think we spoke about it before about Barcelona, but teams don't seem to have a huge amount of fear against this Madrid side at the moment. Do they sense a vulnerability because they've been involved in some really open, sort of entertaining games, but clearly opposing sides seem to sense some kind of vulnerability with them at the moment?
I think that's fair. I think that I'd be not defensive, but I'd be vociferous in praising what Zidane achieved during that 40-game run, because he took over a dishevelled squad. It isn't good enough in position to choke games. So therefore what they have to largely do is either get a day when their forwards are sublime and they pummel another team, or if not, you see the type of we won't be beaten, we won't give an inch at any stage commitment that we all love in every sport. And those things combined with Zidane's work ethic every day, where the players love training, that got them through their 40-game run. But at no stage in the 40-game run did they play any brand of football, I don't think, where any team watching and saying they're going to play us in the future would say, it's impossible for us to beat them, to have a go at them. It isn't like if you open up and have a shot at them, you're automatically going to lose 4, 5, 6, 7 goals like once was the case. It's an atypical Real Madrid side right now in that there's a lot of players who are on long contracts because of the transfer market ban. And in the Galactico culture, that has often led to staleness, complacency, and players being far, far too easygoing on themselves. Now, Zidane has changed that. Do they look as if they've got an absolute philosophy? Do they look like they're an absolute sort of Panzer tank squad? No, but you can play against them, and if you go to sleep for an instant, then you'll get Ronaldo, Benzema, you'll get Morata, or typically Ramos pulling something crazy off, and that means that they're not the finished article, and that means teams can have a shot at them. But if you go back to that game that you and I loved so much, Madrid bossed it, were 1-0 up, and looked like absolutely sure they'd complete their third big win plus a draw in Sevilla in one season. But that 5 minute cost them. That's the beauty of football.
Graham, great question here from Connor. It's kind of a history question wrapped up in a sociology question. Lads, you've had Dermot Gallagher and John Giles on the show tonight blaming foreign players for bringing diving into English football. Can you ask Graham Hunter when and where diving came into European or particularly Spanish football? We blame them. Who do they blame?
They don't blame anyone. There is still a culture here that if you can cleverly take advantage of a referee or another player and get away with it, then largely that's what it takes to win, and that's an acceptable cost for winning. That is broadly the practice. What Connor may already be completely sure about is the predominant Spanish players who were elite footballers here in La Liga and who came to the Premier League, every single one of them said there's more mutual respect here, there's less tolerance of diving, and they all say that's one of the premium things they loved about playing in the Premier League. But if they have to do exactly that for the international team or when they come back here, it is taken as absolutely accepted. Not outrageously, but if it will win you a positive advantage in a good area of the pitch, it'll be done time and time and time again.
Yeah, that's exactly the brilliant answer that I was looking for there. Thanks a million, Graham.
Cheers, lads.
Graham Hunter with us every Thursday night. Still Hull 1, Man United 1, 84 minutes on the clock. Chances at both ends.
Yeah, it's a cracking cup tie now. Oh, well, it's getting there anyway. It's certainly been more entertaining than the early sort of first 15 minutes or so.
Yeah,
Hull have hit the woodwork. They're in a situation now you would think, well, they have no option but to go for it, and therefore it leaves them sort of vulnerable to opportunities on the break. But sort of United haven't been that slick on the break. I think they're almost content as well that they're in a position of control. We're watching great ball by Myler.
That's it, 2-1 to Hull.
Yeah,
game back on all of a sudden with 6 minutes left to go. Ooh, away goals count double after extra time.
Yeah, it doesn't figure at this stage. David Myler actually sort of overlapping a fantastic sort of first time cross, and then Nias, who's come in from Everton, I think, hasn't it? Having a pretty unsuccessful spell there. But yeah, Myler's sort of raided forward to the right side.
Oh, acres of space.
Ball is floating in his direction, but he kills it with a brilliant sort of first time volley pass across the 6 yard box.
May have been offside. He's been marked by Wayne Rooney.
Terrific. It says, yeah, Rooney came on a few minutes ago for Lingard. And you sort of thought they were going to use their experience to get through the game. And they'd been doing okay. They sort of weathered a bit of a storm when they hit the woodwork and made a change or two. And they had a chance of their own when Pogba was then flagged for offside. You sort of thought they were okay. But now it's set up an interesting 5 minutes.
85 minutes on the clock. So 5 minutes and then plus whatever stoppages. Plenty of stoppages, loads of subs, and a bit of time wasting a bit earlier on from Manchester United when it looked like everything was going great for them. So Hull 2, Manchester United 1, 3-2 to Man United on aggregate, and Hull have relieved the pressure from a Manchester United corner. Looks like there was an offside, maybe. Right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with full time from this after these.
Off the ball.
Home of the Saturday panel, every Saturday from 1.
On News Talk 106 to 108.
Hull 2, Manchester United 1. There are 89 minutes on the clock. It means it's 3-2 to Man United. Man United's trying to play a little bit of keep ball deep in Hull territory, and they're not bad at that. It looked like the Rondos at five aside were going well, and then as soon as I finished my sentence,
standard. Yeah, the old commentator's curse there is Hull now burst free, liberated after that spell of taunting from Manchester United. And they've got a corner from it. Oh no, sorry, it looked like the ball was going to deflect, but it's been claimed. So yeah, it's interesting. We're heading into 90th minute now, so there was a few subs and
it's Fergie time, really,
one
isn't
or two
it?
Little injuries and stuff. So we're waiting to see on the board what's left. Three.
Ah,
seems a bit harsh.
Yeah,
seems a bit harsh.
That's how we need Man United in the cup final here. Otherwise, no one's going to buy any bloody tickets. Yeah. Hull can't even sell out this stadium.
That's true.
How
actually,
are they going to fill Wembley?
The whole Southampton decider possibly isn't what the sponsors are dreaming of.
No, for sure. There is some other news that we should tell you about that's been going on in the world today. Leon Best has been turfed out by Mick McCarthy.
Yeah, I don't know if people watched Lincoln against Ipswich last Tuesday. I think it was a pretty poor list of FA Cup replays, and Lincoln and Ipswich was shown. Probably not great for Mick McCarthy. That probably the worst performance I think Ipswich have probably put in since he's been there. Get knocked out by a non-league side. Leon Best, like, he's had a checkered career in the last few years. He, from that point at Newcastle, he had a very good spell in his career and things were going pretty well. He scored a Premier League hat-trick. He's always going to be
scored since.
Joined Blackburn for big money, did his cruciate shortly afterwards, which is unfortunate. And then since then, he's sort of been just bouncing around from club to club. Brighton, Derby, Rotherham last year. He's been at a few clubs, not done especially well. But like, I do have huge sympathy for Mick McCarthy. I did a piece on this earlier in the week that you know, Mick McCarthy's done a reasonable job at Ipswich, but they don't give him any money really at all. So at the start of the season, he loses Daryl Murphy to Ipswich, basically bought by Ipswich to be their, you know, sorry, bought by Newcastle, to be their like third or fourth choice striker, because they can afford to. But Mick McCarthy can't really afford to lose, you know, Daryl Murphy. Takes a chance on Leon Best. I think he's played 12 games, no goals. The last one was against Lincoln. I mean, he was shocking in the game. He was. It's just one of these things where he didn't look like hurting the opposition at all. And, you know, you don't want to guess it from afar, but I don't know. It's just his application, I just thought, was poor in the game.
And McCarthy clearly agreed with you.
Clearly there's been some discussion afterwards. He decided after the Lincoln game that was it. He came in, trained well for 2 weeks. This would have been the start of the season and really impressed everyone. It was a case of right place, right time for him, but he's not done it since. I'm sure Leon has a different view, but it's my view that counts. And basically, I mean, he's under contract, but he said he's not going to play for him again. So that is the end of Leon Best and Ipswich Town. Although, he's under contract, so I guess he's got a one-year deal. It's coming up the transfer window time. It's a pretty common time of year for clubs to do a termination, pay off the rest of the contract, go somewhere else in a short-term deal, whatever it is. But I've maybe McCarthy, I don't know, does he need to get people out to bring something in? He signed Stephen Taylor from Newcastle, or ex-Newcastle, who was in the MLS on a free today. But that team against Lincoln, there was 9 free transfers, 1 player on loan, and then there was 1 player they paid a transfer fee for. You consider they're in the same division as Aston Villa, say, who are, you know, spending big money in the last week. They signed Ross McCormack for like 12 million last summer.
And
he's not turned out for, you know, he's got an issue with his electric gates still. But, you know, Newcastle able to spend big money, Norwich, teams coming down from the Premier League with the parachute payments and the wealth and so on, are throwing wild money around. Mick McCarthy's under pressure. Like, there's a big debate over his future at the moment. But I'm not sure if he could have done much better with the resources that he has. I gather they can still do okay in wages, but they just don't seem to pay any kind of fee. And clearly he's frustrated enough and he's decided to get rid of Leon Best, yeah.
Full time. Hull have won on the night in 90 minutes, but Manchester United go through 3-2 on aggregate. It's kind of the story of Manchester United season so far.
Just
a little bit.
It's sort of a slightly hollow
things are going well, great, so we're all so happy, but actually I'm
things are going
inside.
Okay and going quite well, just not there in the real convincing sense. There's no I'm not sure there'll be scenes of jubilation tonight in any scenario, but
can you do it in Hull on a rainy Thursday night? It's not actually raining, but no, it turns out they can't.
No, not yet.
Well, they did the job. Isn't that all they had to do? You know, they're professional.
In a different place. If it's another team, you'd say they did a nice professional job.
Mm.
They got through, but it was I don't know. Mourinho was sort of marching off down the tunnel afterwards. And that could be penalty related rather than performance related. We'll soon find out.
Brede Hangeland, who never quite made it to the heights that maybe we would have anticipated, given how he was in every transfer window linked with a move to Arsenal,
has
been talking about various players he played with, particularly Emmanuel Adebayor.
Yeah, this is interesting. Brede Hangeland doing something on a Norwegian radio show, And I assume Emmanuel Adebayor came up because he's back in the news. He's at the African Cup of Nations, and I think he gave an interview with FIFA.com speaking about how he was blessed with golden genes and would fancy a move back to the Premier League. Breda Hangeland's sort of recollections of Adebayor wouldn't be that fond.
Played together at Crystal Palace,
but he was telling a story about playing for Fulham when Adebayor was at Spurs. And speaking about how Fulham were on the attack, so obviously Adebayor is up the pitch, Hangeland's there, this was a bit of loose talk takes place. He suddenly turns around to Hangeland and says, "I'm hungry." And Hangeland says, "What?" And Adebayor says, "Yeah, I can't wait for the game to finish. I'm so hungry. Do you know a good restaurant in London, Hangeland?"
Is there any chance this is him trying to get in the head of Hangeland? "Oh, look, I'm not really that interested," and then pops up and scores a late winner.
Potentially the case. But then he goes on to this kind of food team at Adebayor, that when they were at Crystal Palace, and this was this remarkable thing, it's only when you see it, because obviously Adebayor went from one club to another, but obviously you have this situation, a high earner leaves the club that he's gone from, they may still be paying his wages further down the line, even if he's gone somewhere else.
A portion of it at least to get him off.
Just to get rid of him. So anyway, later, says Hangeland, "when he came to Crystal Palace, I started to realise where this came from." I assume this is his insatiable appetite. "When we had strength workouts, he would sit in the gym with just a cup of coffee and a muffin." "He was being paid by Manchester City, Tottenham and Palace at the same time, and he was sitting in the gym drinking coffee. Incredible natural talent, but very lazy."
That is my kind of gym session.
That does seem like, you know, that's the people who are cheating, like staring at their phone or doing various things.
Yeah.
He just went straight all the way to coffee and muffin.
Yeah, that is me. Tom Dunn, good evening to you.
Good evening. I didn't get to see any of that game, but I have it recorded.
Well,
fast forward through large periods of it, Tom.
Watch the second half, maybe?
Yeah, and then you'll be very pissed off as a Man United fan.
Is it that bad?
It's not great, yeah.
Still, it's not the result that matters and all that kind of stuff. They're in a final now.
They are, and they'll be favourites against Southampton, but yeah. I think Southampton could do them, just the way things are playing.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Nervous old team, aren't they?
Yeah.
Never really know which one you're going to get.
Not quite clear on what their roles are supposed to be.
Still.
A team who were managed by Jose Mourinho is supposed to know.
Well, he did. It's only his first season and all that kind of stuff. And he did inherit loads of those players and he's trying to make the best of them. And he had 7 for one position and all of those things that we've read. I know as a United fan,
you're hopeful.
Far happier this year. Even if they lost, I'd still be thinking, I'm enjoying the games more.
Yeah,
not suffering like we did last year.
Yeah,
so that's good. I think he's got great personality. I think he can do stuff. So we live in hope.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Yeah. Apart from playing music tonight, and if there's anything people would like to hear, they should text 53106. Said that last night and got great suggestions. So it took me 24 hours to dig out some of those suggestions. They were asking for odd stuff
that I didn't
really have. So I've dug some of them out for tonight, and then giving away the U2 ticket tonight.
Yeah.
And
how are you giving away the single thing which is worth like 25 grand now?
Is it?
I know, make it up.
25 now. We're taking one more caller, one more listener name into the pot tonight, putting all 4 names in, just a hat and picking one out.
Right.
Simple as that. So that's after 10. Just listen to, I'll play a track off an album. You tell me the name of the album. Simple as that.
Okay.
And we might take your name in, then you get in for the draw. And then after 11, Ken's in, and we're talking about middle eights. Do you know what the middle eight is?
Verse chorus,
middle eight. That's when you're writing songs. You do a verse, then you do a chorus, you repeat the verse, repeat the chorus, and then you do a change that's not like the other 3 bits, the other 2 bits. That's called the middle eight. And the Beatles were the masters of the middle eight. And loads of bands, Pretenders do great middle eight, Squeeze do great middle eight, Gilbert O'Sullivan, great middle eight.
Are there any obvious examples that we know from?
Bruce Springsteen. In Born to Run, that bit where it goes into kind of almost dreamlike sequence, that's the middle eight bit.
Okay.
Often it's the heart of the song, often this singer kind of reveals what this is all about.
Yeah.
Some hidden bit. When you get a good middle eight, it just makes you want to sit up and applaud. So suggestions to 53106, and we'll be playing some of the best of them after 11 for that.
Sounds good. Tom, great stuff. Thanks very much. We're going to take a quick break back after these.
Off the Ball.
Home of Wednesday night rugby with Woody and Jerry.
On News Talk 106 to 108.
It was Suarez, Messi and Suarez with the goals, but it was Dennis Suarez with the first goal, and then Luis Suarez with the third goal to give Barcelona a 3-1 lead against Real Sociedad. Juanmi with the Sociedad goal when it was 2-0 after Messi scored from the penalty spot. And then Luis Suarez has scored now, so that one is 4-1 on aggregate. Barcelona are going through to the Copa del Rey semi-finals. And I don't know anything about Dennis Suarez, I'm not going to lie to you.
He was at Man City when he was younger. Yes, I think I have a funny feeling I saw him play in Limerick for Man City in a friendly.
Right.
I could be
all the glamour.
Badly mistaken. But yeah, he's he's one of the sort of newer breed of Barcelona player who I think was spent a bit of time away when he was younger. Yeah.
So they send him off over there?
No, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think, was it on a permanent basis that he was? I think he might have been at Man City when he was a kid for a while.
No, right, he's 23.
Been involved, but I think Barcelona then bought him. But I'm not sure if he went directly from City to Barcelona, or did he go somewhere in between? But
went straight from Manchester City to Barcelona B.
Yeah. Yeah, so he, I'm almost
had a season at Sevilla on loan.
Yeah, I'm almost sure he was, because Man City sort of played a friendly in Limerick in Thomond a number of years back, and at the time it was sort of a fringe Man City team. And I think he was involved in that game.
Yeah, 2011, 2013, he's at Man City.
Yeah,
zero appearances and zero goals in non-friendly games. So,
yeah, well, I think, you know, it's there's so many players out there at some of the bigger English academies who've just spent a bit of time there. But their CV are like that. But it's unusual that they end up Barcelona.
He's Man City's Young Player of the Year, as voted by the fans in 2012. And it's funny how you don't make it and then you think, oh, well, that's the end of your career. But actually, now he's scoring for Barcelona in the Copa del Rey. Played 17 times for them this season.
Yeah, it's never too late. No, it's never too late. So, no, he's been involved quite regularly this season. He's sort of, you know, when you consider certain other players that they've brought in, you know, Al Sacher from Valencia and so on, and people who haven't really been involved, and he's certainly, he seems to be sort of in their first 14 as such. If you get me, he sort of drops in and out of games. Yeah. You know,
not a bad situation to be in.
No,
at that stage.
No, definitely not.
Another goal for Real Sociedad, Barca 3, Sociedad 2 in that game. So we were talking about Breda Hangeland a little bit earlier on, saying that Manuel Adebayor was hungry, like literally hungry all the time, as opposed to money hungry. John Tremor says, I always found playing football an appetite suppressant. The idea of craving a bag of chips mid-match just doesn't compute. He also said that Dimitar Berbatov was tight. That was the other Breda Hangeland.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's clearly making friends there. He's probably not going to see them again, really, is he?
So, no.
I'm not too bothered about not seeing him, to be fair.
You know? When you're dishing the dirt like that.
Yeah.
Still, dishing the dirt's not too bad. Let's get the full-time story of the game in the EFL Cup tonight. A victory for Hull on the night, but Manchester United go through. Here's Al Ross.
Hull 2, Manchester United 1. Twice Hull were a goal away from forcing extra time, but in the end United's 2-0 first leg win was just about enough. Had Hull gone through, questions would have been asked about their debatable first half penalty and why United weren't awarded a clearer spot kick in the second half. Tom Huddleston's penalty cancelled out by Paul Pogba. Both sides then hit the bar before Umanias converted to win Hull the game, but not the tie. It's United against Southampton at Wembley in the final. On aggregate, Hull 2, United 3.
Hull 2, United 3. There's a couple of other stories that we just want to round out for you this evening. We've talked about Breda Hangeland. We've talked about Leon Best. We haven't talked about Darren Bent.
Darren Bent, yeah, he's opened up on his addiction problems. Unfortunately, you know, it's like the old episode of Father Ted where, you know, what was Dougal addicted to? Oh, it was just skateboards or something. there was sort of something unusual like that. Anyway, Darren Bent is addicted to trainers. It turns out.
Is this a real thing? Is this something we can actually have a joke about, or go, hey, somebody enabled him along the way?
And like, there's loads of other people out there who can thoroughly empathise with a situation. Yeah, he's a trainer addict, as he's been described. I think he was interviewed by the BBC. So trainer addict has revealed his astonishing collection of thousands upon thousands of shoes.
What I wonder about this, right, so can he sell them on? Like, is there a residual value in these? Or is it like secondhand trainers, no thanks?
Yeah, I don't know, actually, because I assume, I mean, if he was once buying 60 pairs a month and started building up his stash some 20 years ago. So one of his old friends got him into it, you know, maybe 15, 20 years ago. I was collecting 50, 60 pairs a month. And there was a picture I saw of Bent in this room in his house.
Yeah.
And it's like the storeroom of, you know, a sports shop. They're all still in there. He hasn't discarded the boxes. He has all the boxes there as well.
I can picture the scene.
So maybe at some stage in his future, you know, that will be like the Darren Bent collection will be available. He says, I don't know if they're sort of classic types of stuff. Michael Jordan is one of my favourite athletes ever, so I've got a lot of his trainers. But as he explains, I don't play golf. I like to collect trainers. That's just my hobby.
Yeah, Darren Bent was a very wealthy footballer, because every move he made was for way more money than you would have anticipated. And presumably, with those, the contract is also way more than...
How much did Aston Villa pay? Something like 20 plus million for him?
Yeah, I would say between 18 and 21.
Yeah, I mean, because he had to move to Spurs and then to Sunderland. He's at Derby County at the moment. The context is that Derby County are playing in the FA Cup game tomorrow night against Leicester, the televised game. So obviously Bent's decided to throw open his wardrobe and get a window into his world. But I suppose, I mean, there's worse ways to spend to spend your money when you're sort of a wealthy footballer and you hear tales of woe. I suppose if he ever runs into difficulty at some stage, he can always sell his trainer collection.
Can he? Oh, who's going to buy them?
I don't, I don't know. some really, like, you know, for, you know, really wealthy fan of one or other of those clubs. Although I'm not sure, is he revered in any of those places?
I don't think so. Maybe somebody like Stephen Ireland buys that trainer collection off.
Well, Stephen Ireland has, Stephen Ireland, with his wealth, he's put in a five-a-side football pitch in his house.
Oh, yeah?
That's one of the things that he's done, yeah.
I thought he hates football.
But this is the thing.
Why did I get stuck doing it?
What a complete contradiction. That, this came up in a court case last year because I think neighbours were complaining, saying that, you know, late at night they were hearing, you know, games of football, maybe some language, some cursing, and he'd have his mates over for a game of five-a-side. It just goes to show how Stephen Ireland is a complete mystery, that I would have totally subscribed to the point of view that, yeah, he's just this guy who's, he's you know, he's earned all this money, but he hates the game now. And
he went on Twitter and said, football is crap, I hate it, why did I get stuck doing it?
Yeah, but clearly, I mean, look, maybe he's not playing in the games himself. Maybe he just hires it out, and people just come over and sort of gets his mates to sort of play football there, and he just likes watching them. Or maybe he's just, you know, his enjoyment of football is not the show, the, you know, just the sheer joy of just having a kick about with the lads, you know, which is where most people get into the game. Is maybe that's where his you know, that's what his passion is for now.
Mm.
He also spent a load of money on a big goldfish bowl, though,
as well. He did, yeah. There was a very expensive fish and the pink rims on his Range Rover.
Yeah, some slightly questionable purchases. But the five-a-side football pitch does make you think about the character and wonder before he... Will we ever fully know Stephen Ireland?
I don't think we will. Jose Mourinho's been speaking post-match here. He is talking to Sky. He is in pretty Jose Mourinho form here.
Jose, congratulations. You're in the final. What are your thoughts?
I just want to say congratulations to my players because it was a difficult road to be in the final. And we are in the final. I don't want to say anything else because... is enough. I'm calm. I behaved on the bench. No send off, no punishment, so no more words.
He's basically saying we should have a penalty, they shouldn't have a penalty, their goal's offside. They're screwing me. English football is screwing me here.
It's like read between the lines. I'm really calm, you know, but like, you know, Michael Douglas is calm and falling down, you know, like it's he's totally chilled there. There's literally nothing on his mind whatsoever that could be causing him a deep anger inside.
It's interesting that he chose not to criticise his players because they weren't great tonight.
I think it's, you pick the time. I still think they're in a final and the face you want to show to the world is,
Maybe we're expecting too much. Maybe football has moved on to the point where even this, I can't finish that sentence. Sean Maloney was playing. David Myers at right back. Come on. Like, you're supposed
to. It's not great. I guess the pass he gave is...
And Everton Castoff, who's never scored a goal in English football, is scoring against you tonight.
Yeah, I guess from the position of just being in such a position, all those factors that you raise, they just couldn't raise themselves because they assumed that they were true. And they, you know, if you're going to be complete sort of glass half full from that perspective... You know, they had a ropey spell, but they rose, you know, they lifted it for a period, got the goal, and rode the luck a bit, but they got through it.
More fool us, Dan McDonald. Lads, look at Darren Bent's Instagram. Most of his trainers sell for over a grand a pair. This guy's a financial genius.
And he's got thousands. He's going to be with Thomas Gravesen in Vegas in 5 years'
time.
We
need financial advice from him instead of me scoffing at him. Dan, thanks very much for being part of this show tonight.
Thank you, Jared.
My thanks to everybody else involved in the show as well. On tomorrow night's programme, it's El Crapico, the crappy quiz, where the off-the-ball team vent all their frustrations via the medium of radio's least sporting sports quiz. We'll also be giving you some money-spinning tips in Friday Night Racing with Don McLean. Don McLean is not up next. Tom Dunn is up next. Good night.